Star Splitter.
Hey guys, Danny Keene here. Thank you for checking out my Star Splitter podcast, a collection of science fiction short stories. Please check out our Patreon page to support us on our journey. The season finale involves terrifying monsters and the darkness we all face. Strap in. This one's a ride. Hush World, Part 1.
Time until we reach the surface?
Levy grumbles.
Not long. Why? You need to use the little men's room? Screw you, Sparks!
Levy says, twisting his helmet on. It hisses shut, and the edges of the seal glow green.
You wish you could!
Sparks teases, whipping her blonde ponytail over her shoulder.
Shut up, both of you!
I roll my eyes.
Gah! You argue like an old couple.
I take another bite out of my ration bar, chew, and try to swallow down my irritation along with my intense hunger.
Careful, Brian,
Levy says, eyeing me.
You're only a few bites from being fat.
I stop chewing and glare at him. Levy laughs and directs his attention to the monitor in front of him. Being our engineer, he oversees the systems of the two scouts and our starship, Reacher, as well. I finish the last bite of my bar and stuff the empty wrapper in my pocket. Cryosleep usually steals my appetite for hours or days, but I have been starving since I woke up. Our scout shudders. Monarch's atmosphere roars around us like a hungry animal. The small craft cuts through the few clouds that strafe the sky. The view screen and a myriad of windows reveal the other scout ship descending at our side. Mills, Yin, and Abara are on that vessel. Other than Sparks, Mills is the best pilot we have. Past the other scout, I see the dark land rushing up from below. The scout bucks sharply again. I grip the armrest. Designed to serve simultaneously as an exploratory vessel and as an escape pod, the scout is well past due for an overhaul. The stabilizers struggle to make the trip smooth. But the others don't really care about comfort, and as long as it's safe, I don't mind either. Above my head, Reacher glints in the light of the nearby star, Atreides Prime. The yellow star peaks around the horizon with brilliant rays. Mills' Texan accent carries over the radio from the other scout.
Well, we definitely can scratch Monarch off the list of our future tourist traps. Only a mother could love that face. You know who else has a face like that?
Yin asks with a high-pitched, playful voice.
Shut it, Yin.
Mills snaps and then chuckles.
Touché.
Levy smiles at their conversation and looks through the window again.
Speaking of moms, I wish my family could see this.
I sense his longing, and it mirrors my own. Levy has a wife and two kids back waiting for him on Earth. Late at night, I always can tell when he takes out his photos of them, when a wave of love and longing floods the halls. I eye the planet's surface and shake my head incredulously. We made it. We actually made it to planet P249, otherwise known as Monarch. Despite the turbulence, I feel a smile pull from my heart to my lips. Dad would love to see this. A pang of loneliness jabs my chest, and I wonder what my father is doing right now. I hear Sparks humming over the comm in my spacesuit's helmet to some old American song. I catch wisps of her excitement and joy, and I smile. She grips the controls and deftly guides the craft toward the ground. From the report I read, Monarch is the newest world to be rediscovered under the Union. According to ancient archives, Monarch had been the home of Sparta, the most significant trillium mine in human history. Trillium is the most precious element in the known universe because of its incredible strength and durability. But before the Great War began, humanity marked this colony as unsafe, which doesn't surprise me as we rocket over black mountain ranges with deep canyons.
T-minus 3 minutes until we reach Sparta,
Sparks announces over the comm. Her green eyes flash in my direction, and she nods. Beautiful was the word that lanced my thoughts when I first saw her. She is beautiful, but distant. Being attracted to her is complicated since she's the leader and I'm just the empath and medical assistant. So I keep my distance. I sigh and force myself to relax. I double-check that my med bag is still by my side. The scout crosses over a body of water. The liquid looks nearly brown with flecks of white as waves crash against each other. Ahead, I catch the unnatural shape of a spire on the horizon. As we near it, I realize in shock that they did not build the tower on an island or landmass. They literally built the spire in the ocean.
Sparta reaches below the ocean floor,
Levy says, examining his scans.
The structure is completely intact. There seems to be very minimal oxidation on the building, even after hundreds of years.
And after a moment, he laughs in shock.
They made the entire building out of trillium.
Sparks glances at me for a moment and grins again, and I smile back. This alone makes our trip a success, and we haven't even landed yet. Levy looks up, eyes flashing.
There's a large landing pad on the other side of the tower. It's safe to land on.
The Union was right to consider this abandoned planet worth investigating. Monarch is full of unknown possibilities and wealth. There is no explanation in the sparse records about why it was abandoned. Regardless, I'm just happy to be paid. Dad needs the money, and yeah, I need the money too. But the longer I'm away, the harder this becomes, especially knowing how sick he's... My stomach suddenly gurgles, and I realize that I'm hungry again. Groaning, I almost pull out another bar, but remember Levy's comments in time to resist the urge. I'm not fat by any means. Physical fitness has always been a passion of mine, but now I feel self-conscious. Sparks shakes her head in disbelief and circles the structure. The two scouts glide together and we come into view of the landing pad. A spacecraft on its side already occupies one end of the large platform, one wing missing. Extreme age and oxidation smother the hull. It's as if the occupants had been trying to leave but never made it. Sparks frowns and glances at Levy.
Any remains? Yes. There are two bodies inside, and damn. What?
I say.
There's a functioning old-school cryopod, and someone's inside it. Alive.
Sparks shakes her head and presses a button.
Did you hear that, Abara? Be ready to check it out. Roger that.
Abara's smooth, chocolatey voice crackles over the radio. I nod to myself. When not used for my empathic abilities, I am Abara's medical assistant, so I need to be ready the moment we land.
Anything else I should know before we land?
Spark says.
My scans can't go further into the structure,
Levy says, tapping his console.
The trillium makes it difficult to scan inside, but it looks safe.
Mill's voice buzzes over the speakers.
We can't get any more information either. We're green to go if you are.
Sparks taps the monitor.
Let's do it.
Our scout rumbles around the tower once more, and then squeaks on the pad, shutting the engines off. In the new silence, I hear the roar of the other scout touching down beside us. In another moment, their engines go quiet too. My medical bag fits snugly across my chest, and I glance at my weapon at my hip. The Union started a self-protection protocol 2 years ago, after ravenous wolves had killed a crew on a terraformed planet.
We only have 15% oxygen here, so keep your suit on. Let's go save a human fossil,
Levy says, and punches a red button. The door lowers with a groan. Wind gusts the interior, and I brace myself against the chair.
Let's go,
Sparks shouts in the calm. We hurry out. Wind rips at my arms and legs, threatening to tug me off the ledge and into the ocean 1,000 feet below. The scout closes behind me, and we hurry toward the broken ship. Yards away, I see Mills, Yin, and Abara exiting their vessel. Abara nods to me, gripping her large medkit. Abara and I lead the way to the ancient craft. She tries the door, but it's jammed. We crawl through the broken windshield to reach the interior. Dry bones lie on the floor in a far corner. We gingerly step over them and walk to the back of the ship. Three emergency pods stand upright along the end of the vessel. One is occupied, and my heart hammers against my ribcage. Ice encases the form of a man, frosting his already white hair, which contrasts with his middle brown skin. His sharp features seem emaciated to me. A trillium chain hangs from his neck, and the distinctive black-silver metal glints under a coat of ice. A name tag on his uniform reads, Lance Antar. Abara hurries to the pod's control panel and studies the symbols.
I don't know Old English. Can you read it?
I hesitate for a moment and study the screen. My parents once read the Bible in Old English to me, so I am familiar with the language. Memories of my mother's and grandparents' terrified faces echo in my mind. I shake them away and clear my throat. In seconds, I begin the defrost sequence. But according to the computer, it'll take around 10 minutes to complete. I tap the computer, searching. If I remember correctly, there should be... Yes. I touch the hover command, and the entire pod disconnects from the wall and floats with a hum. With Abara's help, I push the gliding pod through the broken windshield. Outside, elation courses through me. We are about to meet someone from another time, another century before the Great War itself. I grip the pod against the wind and guide it toward the tower. I falter. There is no door leading into the tower, only a jagged hole. The door and the wall, or at least what's left, lays crumpled to one side, leaving a gaping maw. That's what it looks like. A gaping, waiting, hungry mouth. Hunger. My stomach growls again, and I struggle to think through the painful sensation. Why am I so hungry? This doesn't seem normal. Perhaps I should talk to Abara about it.
What could destroy Trillium like this, Levy?
Abara asks, gaping. Levy brushes past me and studies the opening. He quickly studies his scanner. His fingers fly across the screen, entering commands.
From what I can tell, it was an explosion. Some mining explosives were used here. Smart place to use bombs,
Mills says dryly. Levy shrugs and looks at his screen again before stepping inside the hole. Sparks follows him, and I hesitate on the brink.
You sense anything?
Yen asks at my elbow.
I
struggle to sift through the emotions I'm sensing, but I can't think through this incredible hunger.
I don't think so,
I finally say. Unease creeps down my back, but I force my feet forward. Inside, I see that there is a second airlock door that is intact. Levy touches the keypad, and the door opens. Why would a logical human being leave a perfectly sound structure like this to never return? A disease, maybe? Or radiation? Levy or Yin would warn us if there was any unsafe radiation levels. And if it were a disease, it most likely died off many years ago. I glance down at the occupied pod. I will scan the man once I'm inside, just to make sure. With a shaky breath, I push the pod over the threshold. The airlock shuts behind us. My headlamp winks on, and my stomach drops. Bones. They are everywhere, lying in the halls, across counters. They are so old, dust and cobwebs wave in the beams of our lights. I swallow down the lump in my throat.
Son of a...
Levy trails off. We stand in silence. No one dares move. My brain zigzags from one possibility, trying to understand what could massacre dozens of people.
What happened here?
Yen says, voicing the question we all are thinking. Dread and fear radiate from my crew until I struggle to breathe.
Abara, scan for radiation and pathogens again now,
Sparks snaps. Abara nods, pulls out her scanner from the medkit, and prepares to scan the interior. Sparks hurries to me, green eyes snapping.
Anything?
She says. Her nearness brings a fresh wave of emotions and I wince. After the culture finally accepted Empath's existence as something more than evil, we became required members of every space crew. You never knew when sensing a person or animal's emotions could save your life or avoid a diplomatic incident. I close my eyes and push the other's emotions away, extending my mind beyond. My stomach gurgles again. I frown, sweat beading.
I
crash! The cryopod beside me rocks and tips. The man, Lance, screams and punches the glass with bloody fists. Get me out! Get me out! He shouts in Old English. More glass spiderwebs and cracks. On instinct, I punch the release, and the pod door opens. Lance tumbles out, gagging, coughing. His long hair tumbles over his face and he screams. We have to leave! He sways and streaks toward the airlock. And everyone starts shouting all at once.
Stop him! Grab him! Do something!
We scramble after the crazed man, tripping over bones as we go. Lance reaches the airlock. He fumbles with the buttons. I slam into his back and grab his arms, trying to pull them behind him. He yells and whips around, yanks his hands free, and tackles me to the ground. He twists my helmet and the seal releases. I grasp at the helmet, but it tumbles to the floor. Lance punches me and roars in my face. His words make no sense. Don't touch me! You need to leave! His breathing becomes more frantic. His eyes grow wider and wider. Leave! Leave! Leave me alone! Lance ducks away, dodging the rest of the crew, and sprints down the hall. Abruptly, he skids to a stop and puts his head between his hands. Sparks raises her hand, and the group stops, panting, unsure what to do. I struggle to my feet and pull out my gun.
No, no, it's happening to me,
Lance says. He shakes his head, and his voice becomes higher pitched and panicked.
No, no, no!
With a jerk, he whirls around and glares at us. His eyes change from panic to neutral animosity. Maybe hunger. The same hunger I had been feeling rockets from him. Sparks raises her gun.
Sir, stand down. I don't want to hurt you.
Lance growls and runs down the hall. Sparks fires a shot, but the bullet ricochets harmlessly off a wall. I raise my hand.
Wait! Stop! Don't kill him!
Sparks fires again. Another bullet skids off the floor, inches from Lance's foot. But in seconds, he's gone. Yin and Mills step forward.
Let him be,
Sparks says. Mills jerks around.
But Captain, we can't afford... We have other problems, Mills,
Sparks snaps. She looks at me, and her eyes glance over at my deserted helmet. I did not have to be an empath to see the worry on her face.
What are the readings, Abara?
Abara's dark, full lips purse, and she glances back down at her kit. She taps a few keys and touches the screen, her eyes scanning the symbols. My heart pounds against my ribcage, and I force a deep breath.
But this isn't my crew sphere. This is my own. What if I'm infected with something? A lump constricts my throat. What if I can't go back? Thoughts of Dad lance across my mind. He'd say to trust God. But God didn't save my family. And it wasn't God who was earning the money. Dad depended on me to return so he could live. Not some higher power who never showed up.
We're clear. There are no pathogens. Radiation levels are well within the normal range.
I let out a shuddering breath.
Smells like death, Levy says and pinches his nose.
Nothing new coming from you, Abara smirks. Levy gave her a long look. Ha, ha. Beside them, I squint into the pitch-black staircase at my feet. Stale air wafts past me like the breath of a sleeping animal. Beside me, the blockade of steel beams, chairs, and tables lay in piles on either side of the hall. The miners seem to have used whatever was handy to create a barrier. It must have been a last stand. But who was fighting who? Had it been a mutiny or a riot? Lance crosses my mind and I frown. Or was it all space fever? Insanity?
You're sure this leads to the mine? Sparks asks and glances at Levy.
He has taken the time to map the building, restart life support, and check the infrastructure.
He nods. Like I said before, the damaged elevator and this stairwell are the only ways to reach the mine from inside. There are other portals, but they're underwater.
Okay, stay sharp, everyone. I lead the way down the stairs. The air is suddenly cooler, and it rushes by me. We tried to locate Lance, but found no sign of the man. After Levy turns on the life support, we all take off our helmets. I'm lucky there was enough stale air in the building for me to breathe when Lance attacked me. We descend hundreds of steps. Lights dot the ceiling. But the further we go, the more lights appear broken until none remain. We tap our arm devices and turn on our flashlights. My gut rumbles, and Levy gives me a raised eyebrow. I roll my eyes and push to the front again. The further we go, the more uneasy I become. Minute after minute passes. My world becomes an infinite cycle of heavy breathing, the sour smell of body odor, and bobbing arm lights. Behind me, I sense the crew's growing anxiety, and as if on cue, their jabbering stops, and they keep going, silent, watchful.
These stairs are killing me, Abara finally says, panting.
We're only going down, Abara. We've still got to look forward to going back up.
Abara's irritation flares. I know that. I just hope we don't have to go up these stairs in a hurry. I shine my light down the stairwell and sigh. I agree. If there is an emergency, returning to our scouts would still take a long time. If I thought I was hungry before, I'm starving now. My hunger grows until my innards feel like they are on fire. I think again about Lance and the hunger he exuded before running away. It matches what I've been feeling ever since we started orbiting Monarch. I force my feet forward, trying to think through the fog of cravings. A hush stifles everything. I thought it had been quiet in the tower, but Sparta had the ocean to keep it company. Down here, there is nothing. After 20 minutes of climbing down, we reach the bottom. The stairs open into a large dark hall. The ceiling soars 50 feet above us. Abara flops onto the floor and sweat gleams on her forehead.
This place is awful.
I'll say, Spark says, and sits on the last step. She takes out her water bottle and takes a few swigs before stowing it back in her pack.
I just don't understand it, Mills drawls.
He lifts his forearm and aims the light along the broad passage until the light fades into the murk.
It's like another Pompeii. The bodies, the intact structures. It ain't making sense. We haven't even found any threat that caused this.
Mills shrugs.
All we've found is a crazy person.
Which we lost, Yen says dryly.
I nod and finger the Trinity knot hanging from my neck. My mother had given it to me after she had traveled to Ireland with my father.
Just a reminder that you're loved, Brian, she'd say, and kiss my cheek. I've worn it ever since.
Aside from being proudly old American, both my parents had always been religious and clung to Christianity harder than I'd ever seen anyone do. Especially Dad. Maybe losing everyone he'd loved had something to do with it. But he'd always been tenacious about church. But now, I just miss him. Now more than ever. And I wonder what he'd say about this place. And what I should do. Lance's words ricochet in my skull. Leave. Leave now. I grunt. A fresh wave of starvation washes over me, and I wince, holding my stomach.
Kent? You okay? Spark says, using my last name.
She stands and hurries toward me. Abara, on me! They both kneel beside me.
What's wrong, hon? Abara asks, feeling my forehead.
My mouth clamps shut. No way. If someone's emotions are strong enough, I sometimes believe they're my own until I sift through the facts. Dad would usually figure it out before I would. One time, before I had learned to block out or filter other people's emotions, I'd passed a murderer in the street. It took weeks for me to move past the guilt I absorbed from the killer. This was like that. The hunger was not my own.
Something is wrong, I managed to say.
Sparks frowns.
What do you mean?
This whole place, I say. Lance, the dead bodies, the obvious struggle. I force myself to look straight at Sparks.
We should leave. We found more than enough to interest the Union.
But we haven't seen the mine yet, and that'll be an enormous hole in our report, Levy says. Whatever happened here happened a long time ago. We can't turn and run the second we get bad vibes, Sparks nods.
Agreed.
No, I snap. I've been starving ever since I awoke. At first I thought it was just me, but it's... I struggle to find the right words. Not my hunger. Someone is starving, and I'm only getting the secondary effects.
Sparks bites her lip and rubs her forehead, thinking.
Can you detect any danger?
Not that I can tell yet, but...
But we can't deny something bad happened here, Sparks sighs. Something that was purposely forgotten. You say that someone is starving down here. It's our responsibility to help them. If Lance could survive, there may be others. But in either case, let's check this place out for an hour or two, and then head back. After that, we can reassess what we have, and decide if we can go home.
Sparks looks at me apologetically.
We are down here anyway. We might as well have a quick look.
No! We can't. Let's get this over with, Levy says, ignoring me.
He stands and dusts off his suit.
After discussing the layout of the mine, they decide to split into teams. Levy will lead one team with Yin and Abara. Sparks will take me in the other direction.
Check in every 15 minutes, Sparks says.
Levy grins and lifts his arm device.
Will do,
he says through the comms, and they march into the darkness.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Star Splitter. See you next time.